You know, sometimes we get to the studio, and it's
Mad Dash.
Well, yeah. You know, we take a minute, we make sure everything's good, we have our tea, we have our coffee, we're all ready to do the show. And then sometimes you run to the station and it's 10 seconds before you get on the air. And that's this week. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike, as usual. Hey.
Hey.
And Becky, how are you?
Fine, thanks, Sam. Great to be here.
Oh, man. Bit of a week. Bit of for me. I was on the Atheist Nomads yesterday. The Wes, who's been on the show, he's got a podcast, and I was there. We talked about news, stuff like that. At a tasting room at a microbrewery, which, fun, but a little bit counterproductive in some ways.
How exactly is the sound in a brewery? I imagine a lot of hissing. I mean, I get the image I get in my head is something like an espresso machine. I don't know if I'm off.
It's a little bit more like a really loud microwave. So, yeah, I brought the studio gear, the microphones that could handle noise pretty well.
But so, it's a good thing that that ends up being a podcast and not live radio, since
yeah,
live radio, I think we got rules about that.
Editing can be done. So we have a new segment on the show that we've been calling And the Horse You Rode In On. And part of what we do there is we focus on, you know, the blasphemy stuff and the blasphemy laws in the world and the idea that people are being arrested and sometimes beaten because of their beliefs.
Yes, and basically the news that makes you want to throw a brick at your TV.
So we've got, I shouldn't laugh. Mike, you've got a new news story for us this week, right?
Yes, this actually was reported in the New York Times. Turkey has had a long been considered one of the most secular countries in the Muslim world, and because of this, the arrest of Faisal Say, a classical and jazz pianist with an international career, should be considered shocking. Say, who has controversially self-identifies as an atheist, has been charged under Turkey's blasphemy laws for, quote, publicly insulting religious values of Islam in a series of Twitter posts poking fun at the Muslim concept of the afterlife and the ruling pro-Islamic Justice and Development Party. If found guilty, Say would face 18 months in prison.
18 months in prison for saying, yeah, I don't know about this whole afterlife thing, you know? I mean, this image of the 72 virgins, maybe not our best PR move, you know, guys? Maybe we should think about this. And he's facing 18 months in prison because of it.
Yeah, and other Turkish intellectuals and artists have received similar charges, including Nobel laureate Orhan Pamuk, who has been fined $37,000 for criticisms of the country's foreign policy. These actions have, of course, drawn negative attention from the European Union, which is a group that Turkey wishes to join for, of course, violations of free speech.
You know, that's very strange. You know, I'm not sure about the criticizing foreign policy, whether that would be necessarily under the publicly insulting religious values. But, I mean, if your foreign policy maybe is determined by some of your religious values. You know, the crazy thing here, though, is that under sort of the auspices of trying to join the European Union and saying, hey, you know what, we don't know if we'll let you in because of your violations of free speech. The craziest thing is about 2 weeks ago, we covered the story of a woman, of an academic in Austria, who was facing fines for insulting religious values of someone, basically saying things that could hurt someone's feelings on the basis of religion. And that was in Austria, definitely part of the European Union.
And Poland, a country in the European Union, where a pop star was fined thousands of dollars for making a crack about the idea of the Christian afterlife and saying that the Bible must have been written by someone who smoked a lot of pot.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is pretty crazy. This doesn't just happen in the Muslim world. It doesn't just have to happen in a theocracy. I mean, Turkey, of course, has a secular government. But the secular government, which, like the United States, has this very heavy cultural Islam sort of built under it, the way that the United States has Christianity, is very culturally powerful and very politically organized.
You know, here's the thing. For publicly insulting religious values of Islam, I mean, some of the religious values of Islam is, you know, one of the main pillars is what Allah is the prophet, and complete the statement for me.
Well, only Allah is God and Muhammad is his prophet.
It's, yeah, oh, sorry. Allah is God and Muhammad is his prophet. And, you know, by saying out loud that you're an atheist, you're essentially, you know, contravening that, you know, principle, which could be considered insulting the religious values of Islam.
Well, these sorts of laws are completely unenforceable simply because it's impossible to state your own beliefs without contradicting the beliefs of another.
Where you they're, they're enforceable.
Well, they are if you have a second-class citizen sort of status. I mean, it's fine to enforce just one of them, but, I mean, these countries like Egypt that try to say things like, oh, we're going to enforce it against everybody. Somebody saying that Jesus is not the divine son of God is blasphemy under Christianity.
There is another way to do that, though, and this is the way they try to do blasphemy laws in Europe and blasphemy laws in the United States when they try to bring them up here, is that it's sort of the ecumenical blasphemy. The idea is that everybody sort of edges off on their rhetoric just enough so that they don't cross the streams, as it were. So not only are they abrogating their, you know, not only are they trying to stop the speech of atheists and other religious people, but they're also censoring themselves as well by this point. There's a way to make that stuff enforceable, but there is no way to make that stuff enforceable that doesn't damage the concept of free speech for religious people and non-religious people combined.
And this has always been my issue with it, is it doesn't just prevent somebody from saying, they always throw out words like the defamation of religion, that I'm somehow libeling religion by saying something or writing something bad about it. That's a slander. But what about things that are true about religion and true about religious leaders that just happen to make them look bad? And the example that I always like to think of, when you said, how dare you insult this person like Muhammad, who is considered divine or just beyond criticism in our religion? Well, I have three words for you. L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
With that sort of law in place, I can't point out very true negative things about L. Ron Hubbard, because if you cut out the truth about him, the stuff that is, I guess you could say, the defamation of a Scientologist's religious feelings,
right,
there's very little true I can say about that man's biography, because his entire church biography is just a litany of fabrications.
Yeah, his church biography, it reads like one of his own science fiction stories. It's kind of, you know, it's filled with adventures in Montana as a cowboy. It's filled with,
did
you
go to the Pacific Isles as well?
Yeah, I mean, espionage in, in World War II. And then he apparently did a huge investigation into the occult. And
he's like a superhero.
Afterwards, basically a superhero.
He's like Doc Savage, that he travels the world fighting evil, and he's also like Gandhi, and yeah, he's also like Patton.
Doc Savage, or dare I mention another, someone else who did science fiction in his time, like a Heinlein hero, and a little bit more that than a superhero. And the thing is, each one of these stories has a little bit of kernel of the truth in it, so it would give them just enough basis to say that this is the canonical story, you cannot say bad things about L. Ron Hubbard, or, you know, you're blaspheming our religion and you get thrown in prison.
Exactly. That's a problem, is that that's the sort of things like this Innocence of Muslims movie, where referring to Muhammad as a pedophile.
Yeah, yeah.
There is that kernel of truth in that, because he did marry a six-year-old and did consummate that marriage when she turned nine.
Speaking of ridiculous videos, we have another news story, and it's thousands of Muslims protest Google in London over blasphemous video. And they protested outside of the London Google offices last week, demanding that the company remove the controversial Innocence of Muslims video from YouTube. Our next protests will be at the offices of Google and YouTube across the world. We are looking to ban this film, said organizer Masoud Alom. This is not freedom of expression. There is a limit for that. The insult of the prophet will not be allowed.
So we in this country have a freedom of expression and freedom of speech that's limited by not inciting a riot, not crying fire in a, you know, in a crowded theater. Their line that they draw is insult of the prophet.
Yeah. And so the placards included statements like, we love our prophet more than our lives, freedom of speech equals hatred to Muslims, and the ironic Prophet Muhammad is the founder of free speech. One of the speakers, Sheikh Fiz al-Aktab Siddiqui, told the British Daily Telegraph, terrorism is not just people who kill human bodies, wait for it, but who kill human feelings as well. The makers of this film have terrorized 1.6 billion people.
So hurting feelings makes you a terrorist. Insulting people makes you a terrorist?
Yeah.
Does this make Don Rickles this international terrorist? Because he goes around hurting people's feelings into their face.
Yeah, that basically. Basically, they're trying to make the equation of blasphemy to terrorism, because that's, you know, you hear about that every day, and everybody likes to say all Muslims are terrorists, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I see what they're trying to do there. But to say that hurting feelings is the same thing as harming people, as beating people in jail, as not allowing speech, yeah, I don't see the connection.
Wouldn't we all be a little bit happier if Osama bin Laden had gone around hurting people's feelings?
Right. Yeah.
Wouldn't be glad that, you know, people like in the IRA had gone around hurting people's feelings rather than car bombs?
Yeah. What if Osama bin Laden made a video called the Innocence of Bill Clinton, you know, and basically made a funny video making fun of Bill Clinton that had possibly true parts of it, but were, you know, told way out of whack. Yeah, would anybody care?
So is Monica Lewinsky chasing him around a tent with a shoe trying to hit him?
Yeah, stuff like that.
All right,
yeah.
All right. I'm envisioning the film here.
Yeah, and if you want to get something...
I think Jerry Falwell already produced this video.
I think he did, yeah. I mean, you could even do this with Founding. You could do this with Abraham Lincoln. You could do this with George Washington. You could do this with Thomas Jefferson. In fact, if you did it with Thomas Jefferson, you'd have some A-grade material for that kind of video.
Or even if you just made The Innocence of Christians. And you insulted Jesus, and you said that Jesus was gay, and that Jesus was all these things.
Yeah, stuff that we've said on the show.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's just say he did that. So what?
Yeah, exactly. Would it have changed the face of international politics in a single day?
I think he would not be considered a terrorist by any international standards.
No.
You certainly wouldn't have the President of the United States, you know, begging to take the video off of YouTube.
Well, not begging.
Well, because let's be honest. The difference here is that there is one group of people that when you insult them, they have this cultural taboo that is so much enforced through a theocratic government that they want to kill somebody over it.
Yeah.
That there are car bombs that happen. This is the same thing that happened with the South Park guys when they had Muhammad appear in a bear costume. It's the threats of violence that make it different. And nobody wants to talk about that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk about how if I insult the Buddha, I'm not going to face death threats.
The argument that insulting speech is the same thing as physical harm, there are people, there are even some people in the atheism movement that made that argument, but at the end of the day, it just doesn't make sense to me. Can speech be harmful? Can speech harm people? Can speech cause real life problems and real issues and stuff like that? Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially in this day and age when it's so easy for stuff you say to get propagated across the internet instantly. You know, you got to be careful about stuff like that. But to say it's the same thing as harming people, it's not.
I've heard the argument that people say that free speech protects bad arguments, that free speech protects the sort of harmful racism. I say the exact opposite. I think that we have to take free speech for what it is. It's a freedom, but it's also a responsibility.
Absolutely.
That we have a responsibility that when we see speech that is hateful and lie, that we have to call it out, we have to correct it, and we have to take these people to the carpet so that they're not going to get away with lies.
Speaking of corrections, we do have a news, another news story today. Albert Sabre, who we talked about last week, he's one of the guys in charge of the Facebook page, Egyptian Atheists and stuff like that. So the interesting thing is fortunately, the Albert Sabre trial and the situation that he's facing in Egypt has been picked up by the media. Unfortunately, the media is calling him a Christian. For example, most of the source of this appears to be Reuters. You guys discovered this, right?
It was very strange. In the same article that talks about how he was arrested for posting atheist sentiments and criticisms of Islam on the Egyptian atheist Facebook page, identifies him as a Coptic Christian, which is so odd.
Yeah, this is the thing that I find really weird, is I started seeing the seeds of this a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Where he's being arrested because he has the Egyptian atheist website. A neighbor saw it, called him in. Mob shows up outside his website, his house, and demands that he gets thrown in prison. He's getting brutalized by his interrogators, brutalized by fellow prisoners.
Yeah.
And they're calling him a Christian in the press.
Yeah, Yahoo News, which is carrying the Reuters, their headline was "Egypt must free Christian held for blasphemy over film." The Chicago Tribune, also carrying the Reuters story, their headline was "Christian cop to face trial in Egypt for blasphemy." And the interesting thing about that article is it says right in there, prosecutors have accused Albert of running Facebook pages calling for atheism, insulting Islam and Christianity, and questioning religious beliefs, and have had referred him to a Cairo misdemeanor court. So the article itself makes it very clear that he's calling for atheism. I don't think a Christian would call for atheists, and I think the folks at Reuters would understand that. So I contacted Reuters just before this show and tried to get a comment on them from this, and they referred me to somebody in Cairo to talk to about this. We haven't heard back yet, but I'd like to see what they have to say. Because, I mean, Saber is ethnically from a Coptic family, correct?
Yeah, he comes from a Coptic Christian family, yeah. But he's not a Christian himself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a lot of detective work to find that. It's just the name of the page that had him landed in jail.
Right, right. And I understand that in they want to label him ethnically because that might have some... There might be a dimension to that to this article. But the reason why we need to follow up on this and the reason that this is important, as you were saying, is... you know, Christians like to say how they're persecuted across the world, but atheists aren't persecuted anywhere. And here's an example of an atheist being persecuted, but he's being labeled as a Christian just because he happens to come from a Christian
family. Exactly. And I think that's in a weird sort of way exactly what Richard Dawkins has said, not to label your children by that, especially when your children have the Egyptian Atheist website.
Yeah, exactly.
I find it so bizarre because there are places where Christians are persecuted, and yeah. Egypt is actually one of them, especially now post-revolution, where there's a powerful Islamic-style government,
yeah.
And Christians are... understandably frightened. But atheists have it even worse because those same Coptic Christians probably wouldn't be very friendly to an atheist either.
No. And that's the problem.
That is totally the problem. And I think that a lot oftentimes you see things like the Christian Post or you see WorldNet Daily, they will talk about these sorts of stories and then pretend that the situation that a Coptic Christian might face in Cairo
yeah.
is even comparable to a situation they might face in like Minnesota.
So our hope is that Reuters addresses this with either a correction or a news story properly identifying Albert Saber as a member of the Atheism Visibility Movement. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480, and in a minute, we'll be talking to Greg Epstein, humanist chaplain at Harvard University.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences, and more. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's number one source of atheist videos.
I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow! A bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal! Here you go!
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And recently, the Secular Coalition for America held its, will be holding, or will hold, or held?
It did held.
It was held, okay. Held its first Capitol Hill briefing on October 1st. The briefing was titled The State of Secular America, and was aimed at educating lawmakers and their staffs on those who do not identify with any religion. Panelists addressed who are the nuns, and what they bring to the national conversation, and how the government can best protect their liberties. And with us to talk about that today, we have Greg Epstein, who's the current humanist chaplain at Harvard University. He's an ordained humanistic rabbi and the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe. He heads the Humanist Community Project, has blogged for CNN, Newsweek, and the Pathos Network. And he was on the Washington Post and has been featured on a lot of media, including a past appearance on Ask an Atheist in the debate with PZ Myers. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Doing real well. So how was that briefing?
It was great, and I was really honored to be there. And I also just want to say, first of all, before I get into it, that I love your show, and I love the stuff that you guys do. You're the next wave. You guys are just a regular talk show, really, you know, just good people doing a talk show, but you're talking about atheism and humanism. It just makes me smile, like the Camp Quest ad and the Humanist Center ad and all that. So good job.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. So,
but anyway, yeah, I mean, I was at this event in DC, and it was definitely an honor to be there. It was our first congressional briefing for the humanist and secular movement. It was sponsored by the Secular Coalition for America, and what it was essentially we did a small panel in front of members of Congress and mainly members of the staff of congressional offices. I mean, I can't tell you what congressmen or women might have been there, but I can tell you that there were a lot of staffers from all over the Hill, and we led a really good conversation with them, and you know, the moderator was Edwina Rogers, who is the executive director of the Secular Coalition, and I was one of three speakers, and I thought it was a successful event.
So who were the other two speakers involved standing there with you?
Yeah, so it was a constitutional scholar, Ira Lupu, and then David Niosi, who is the president of the American Humanist Association, and myself. And the way that Edwina asked for it to be set up was she wanted Ira, who, again, is a scholar of constitutional law and knows an awful lot about how American secularism is a sort of established concept and came to be such, and so she asked him to do sort of a background on the state of secularism in America, and then Dave, who has a book out called Nonbeliever Nation, was asked to speak about the recent history of the secular movement, and Dave frames it in terms of a response to the religious right in a lot of ways, and then they asked me as the last speaker to speak about the future of the secular movement in America. And that's what I'm really excited to do because, you know, even things like your show and the emphasis on the fact that we're building a community, to me, speaks to the fact that as a movement, folks like the ones listening to your show right now have a lot of history to us, but our future is even more exciting and goes beyond anything that's ever been accomplished before by this movement, and it's something that I'm really looking forward to being a part of.
So I do have to ask. I mean, the new the atheism movement, the nuns, the statistical nuns, are pretty significant portions of the population around the country. So and obviously that could be a big voting block in the near future. Did they recognize that at the press briefing? How were you guys received?
I mean, I think that they did recognize it, and I think that you know, there were many, many staffers from you know, various congressional offices that were there, and I think they were there because they do take this phenomenon seriously. The staffers in congressional offices are primarily young people, so when I looked around at the audience, it was primarily people my age or younger. You know, they're mid-30s or younger, and I think that they know. I've spent a lot of time on the Hill through my work at Harvard and elsewhere. You know, I meet people who end up working there, and I, you know, get a chance to talk to them, and they recognize, those people that get a chance to have this conversation really recognize that the future is going to look different than the past, and that there is a time coming when this phenomenon that we call secularism, humanism, atheism, etc., is going to be one of, it's going to represent one of the influential groups in America. And so I guess what I'd want your audience to think about it is I framed my remarks in terms of three parts. I said, first of all, the first thing that I want you to remember or recognize is that we humanists, secularists, atheists are people who have positive values.
Yeah.
That we often emphasize, you know, or it's often emphasized about us what we disbelieve in. I think it's equally important, if not more so, to talk about what we do believe, what we do stand for. And so I brought out this poster, and I talked about it in terms of, you can, people can find it as a an album cover on Facebook, where you can put as your over your profile picture on Facebook at our page, facebook.com/HarvardHumanist.
Yeah.
This is, you know, I value reason, compassion, creativity, justice, awareness, environmentalism, feminism, equality, science, progress, pluralism. It talks about all the positive values that we hold once we stop believing in the idea of a God that sets our values for us and tells us what to believe and what to do.
And, and within humanism and even outside of humanism, that is a pretty good cross-section of what people in the atheism visibility movement believe, I think. So
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I think that we really have a lot in common. And I think that you know, what we felt, we had a lot of people sort of talk about what did we want to put on our list of values. And it's nicely designed. And definitely encourage people. You know, so we talked about that, you know, that these are our positive values, and we talked about, I talked about the fact that reason is good, and we, you know, we have reason rallies as a movement, and we have days of reason and whatever, but reason is really, if you want to understand to me what you're calling the atheism visibility movement, I think that it promotes reason in the service of compassion, that we're people who, we really care about our fellow human beings. We care about the world that we live in, because it's the only world we have.
Yeah.
And all we really get is the other people in our lives and our ability to care about them and be cared about by them. And, you know, the loving relationships that we have, the time that we spend appreciating the world around us, it's all we have, and it matters so much to us. And so we're trying to be reasonable, because the more reasonable we are, the more we're able to be compassionate, the more we're able to keep people alive to spend more time with us, the more that we're able to feel like we're doing a good job by our kids and our grandkids and their kids.
So we did ask about how you were received at the press briefing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there was an opinion piece from Dana Milbank at the Washington Post, who had things to say, like, good heavens, God willing. And they don't have a prayer, but the obvious fact won't stop them from exercising their God-given right to petition their government for a redress of grievances.
Yeah.
And I find this very interesting. And Mike, this is something you really like to point out, that Dana Milbank, when she's not railing against when he is not railing against
us
he's
a liberal.
He's a liberal columnist.
Yeah, he's a liberal political columnist, and this kind of emphasizes how far we have to go. I think that a lot of times people who see that we are in a city that's near Seattle have an assumption that we have it really easy, or that the only people who say anything bad against us are fundamentalists. And I look at this article speaking about your guys' press briefing, and it's incredibly condescending.
I can't imagine you guys weren't expecting a response like this from somebody. What happened when you heard about this?
I got to tell you. I mean, I know that it makes a good talking point, but I just don't consider it that big of a deal one way or the other when one writer decides to put something snarky together, because I don't know. It really must not have been a very good day for him, because if he couldn't come up with anything better to say than that, then it just strikes me that he wasn't really paying close attention. Maybe he had a fight with somebody in his family that morning or something. But I mean, I honestly feel like it's one thing that we have the opportunity to do now, and therefore the responsibility to do, is kind of push past a lot of the you know, negative little chatter about us, and recognize that if we do something positive as a movement, given the numbers, given the way that young people are trending in this country, if we organize ourselves into something positive and we show that we have the power to do something to help the society around us, people can write whatever they want. We're going to be a force.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if we kind of sit around and do little other than complain, it doesn't really even matter to me how nice the things that people write about us are. We're not really going to achieve that much because part of the trend towards, the non-religious is that there's a lot of apathy in America right now as people are trying to figure out, well, what are our values? A lot of the trend towards being non-religious has to do with the fact that people have been let down by religious communities. They've been let down by communities that talked about being very high-minded and just didn't come through, that spend more time worrying about really trivial things like, controlling other people's sexuality, would not trivial. It's actually, really pernicious, really, really evil.
Yeah.
But spending time worrying about, really insignificant or unimportant things and not doing the real work of helping people who are lonely, helping people who are oppressed, helping people who are poor and disadvantaged. And I just think that we have this opportunity as we're growing in numbers and awareness. We can really take advantage of that and say, hey, say what you like. We as atheists and humanists and secularists are going to go out and do good things for our community. So, the second point that I made in my talk there was not only are we people of positive values, we are increasingly a community. We are an actual group of people. We are forming organizations, and those organizations are increasingly there or here in society to do good things. We're performing acts of community service. We are performing weddings and funeral ceremonies. We're working with kids. We are educating people all over the place.
I love hearing this, Greg, because, it really flies in the face or contradicts one of Milbank's assertions that the very notion of uniting non-believers behind a common cause is an oxymoron, and that, those who identify as atheists and agnostics tend not to be the type to join affinity groups. This is all things that he said. And, we up here in the Puget Sound area, you in, Cambridge and Boston area, and certainly in the D.C. area, all around the country, we have these pockets of really vibrant atheist and humanist communities of people together.
And it's becoming more than just pockets. And I think we really have an opportunity to show people that now. And I think that's why I just really like that there's a show out there like your guys' show, and I think that the future is that there will be great shows like this all over the country, local shows and the really good ones like yours will become nationally popular, and because this is just a real issue that's not going away. And I feel like one of the things that we're exploring in our community at Harvard is the different ways that our community can express its positive values, like what can we do on a local level to really show people around us, hey, these humanists and atheists are really about good things, and I should get involved, and I want my kids to get involved. And
so,
I want
Greg, another thing too is you mentioned that we have to become a force, and that we have to sort of demonstrate we have power. You mentioned that these religious groups have let people down, but I guess the reason they continue to be treated with respect, because they have money, they have organization.
They do.
Even when they let people down, politicians, when they hold a rally, treat them seriously. So the reason rally was a big part of that, we got 20,000 people out in the pouring rain to show that these things are important to us. What other ways can atheists, non-believers, humanists show that force in a way that gets people to treat us with respect, not just for our ideas, but for our ability to affect change?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and something that I think we should all be asking ourselves. So now, the reason rally was a big success, and it was exciting. I was there. I was there with a lot of my students, and the thing to me now is we've got to go and take that same energy and bring it into our local areas.
Yes.
That it's not enough if we just sort of get together, a few tens of thousands of us on the National Mall every year. We should be doing events like that, hopefully even on a weekly basis, ultimately, in all of our different cities, towns, areas, campuses, et cetera. And we should be doing, community service projects frequently, right? Whether it's tutoring or it's cleaning up something or it is, working on a social justice issue or whatever. We should be doing, kids programs eventually, right? I mean, a lot of your listeners are hopefully too young to have kids at this point, but they will, and you know, it'd be fun to have a really meaningful place for people to take their kids when they start getting older, to teach them what it means to be a good person in a secular way.
Yeah.
We should be doing really meaningful discussions where people are getting together and talking to each other, both about stuff like, hey, you know, who is being discriminated against, who is the victim of blasphemy laws, that sort of thing, but also really helping each other with our lives, like things like, hey, you know, this past week I lost a beloved family member, or, you know, I'm really feeling the, you know, like the work that I'm doing in my career or in my studies just isn't meaningful, and I feel really hopeless, you know. That's the kind of moment where in a religious tradition you'd go and you'd talk, you know, to your pastor about it, or to, you know, the sermon would give you the answer. We don't believe in that, right? Like,
right.
There's no one guy or girl or anyone who can give you the answer to that. But what we can do is we can talk openly, honestly with each other and help each other, right? That when you get a chance to tell people that you care about and respect something that is difficult for you, and they give you positive feedback and positive responses, it's really a meaningful experience and it feels better. And we can be known for positive, supportive communities like
Absolutely.
That, open-minded communities that would, by the way, say, hey, if you're religious, you know, feel free to come on by. You know, you don't get a vote on saying, hey, I think we should pray at this meeting,
right.
But you're certainly more than welcome to come and talk about what's bothering you.
That definitely resonates with me, actually with us. This is one of the things that we're trying to start here in Washington, is a statewide organization where we've got this really great infrastructure at the national level, and mm-hmm. we really have this great infrastructure at the very local level. There's Tacoma Atheists, Seattle Atheists, there's Humanists of Washington, which is still really a Puget Sound thing, Humanists of North Puget Sound. They all do really fantastic work, but it's always in these very hyper-local contexts, so we're trying to organize so that we can provide a lot of the services that you're talking about. We do need to go into the break, so if you'd stick around with us, I do have a couple questions for you. This is This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're talking with Greg Epstein, the humanist chaplain at Harvard University. We'll be back in a moment.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no-cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Washington United for Marriage is working hard to affirm marriage equality in Washington. Ask an Atheist proudly stands united with this campaign. The secular laws that govern our pluralistic society must not adhere to religious doctrine. Bolster the wall of separation between church and state and bolster families and loving partnerships. For freedom of and freedom from religion, vote to approve Referendum 74. To contribute to the campaign, go to askanatheist.tv/r74. This ad was paid for by Ask an Atheist.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future. That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Before we return to our interview, there's a couple of announcements that we do have. Washington ballots for this year's election are in the mail. Kitsap County requires two stamps if it's mailed through the Postal Service. Remember to approve Referendum 74 to prevent religious dogma from determining civil law. And most especially, if you receive a call from anyone asking you to reject the referendum, if you are a supporter of gay rights, we want to know, and Washington United for Marriage wants to know. Provide as much detail about the call as possible, and notify Ask an Atheist and Washington United for, and the Washington United for Marriage campaign. This was something that we talked about last week. There's an organization out there that was like Citizens for United Washing for Marriage, and they were canvassing people. They were calling people on the phone and saying, if you're a supporter of equal marriage, then you have to reject it.
Essentially, they're lying.
They're lying.
They're trying to confuse voters.
Yeah. So remember to approve Referendum 74 if you have a sane concept of what marriage should be.
And if you don't vote.
Yeah. So, also, we got Peggy's Challenge this week. As you know, Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help support the show. We are mostly a listener-supported show, but we also do have advertising. And this week, we have
Eric from Everett.
Ronnie from Denmark.
And Pal from Norway.
Yes.
Is that pronounced?
I don't know, but the middle letter of his name, P. Engstrom L.,
okay.
Is that's pretty cool. I don't know the Norwegian pronunciation,
yeah.
But he is from Norway.
All right, so let's get back to Greg Epstein from Harvard Humanist. And we actually, interesting enough, we announced that we were going to have the interview with you on the show just a little bit before the show, and we immediately got an email for asking you a question. So let me shoot you this question. This is Emmanuel from Kirkland, and he writes, what is the best way to study to become a humanist chaplain? Is there a resource for the layperson looking to move into helping people in this more in-depth way?
Great. Well, there are a few things that one can do. Humanist chaplains, the chaplain term is one that refers to a leader of a religious or humanist community who serves a given institution, like a university or a hospital or a division of the armed forces or that sort of thing. So in order to be a humanist chaplain, you would need to first become certified in some meaningful way as a humanist, a professional leader or organizer, and then the chaplain thing. But I am assuming that the question is really sort of, how could I work in a more professional way to serve a humanist or secular community? And if that's the question, then the answer is there's a few different ways. The most in-depth way that one can do it at this point is come out here to Harvard University and apply to Harvard Divinity School and get a Master's of Divinity degree, and I'll supervise you and your internships and that sort of thing. You'll really get a tremendous amount of training and go out ready to do some terrific professional work.
What was your path, Greg?
Mine was, and by the way, before I get to that, I'll just say, for those that are really interested in this but not quite sure if they're ready to do that big of a step, there's also the Humanist Institute, which is affiliated with the American Humanist Association, and that's a 3-year part-time program where you keep doing everything that you're doing with your life, but you do weekends and like a week a year, and you get some very good training that way as well. And that opens up some options.
Sounds
as well.
A bit like so the reserves.
So I definitely recommend checking either possibility out. I actually was ordained as a humanist rabbi by the International Institute for Secular Humanistic Judaism, which was founded in the 1990s as part of a movement of secular humanistic Judaism, which was founded in the early 60s by Sherwin Wine, who was a teacher of mine and one of the more important humanist leaders of the 20th century, has a great book called Judaism Beyond God, and another great book of humanist philosophy called A Staying Sane in a Crazy World. And it was just one of my sort of philosophical heroes and one of my best teachers, and I was lucky to study with him and in that program. So the idea is, cultural Judaism. Judaism is my culture, but philosophically and my life stance is humanism, and I'm interested in humanism that serves all people.
Very cool. I think it sounds like Emmanuel then has a few resources to check out between the American Humanist Association, between different Masters of Divinity programs, and I might also mention the Ethical Culture Society as well as another
one
that I'm
aware
of.
That's right. They've got a leadership training program, and my colleague at the Humanist Community at Harvard and Humanist Community Project, James Croft, is now studying in the Ethical Cultures Leadership Program as well. So that's a good call to mention them. And that's the American Ethical Union. You can check them out as well.
So I do have a question for you, and it's a little bit closer to home. Is you've been on the show before. We did. It was sort of an experimental thing. We had you debating P.Z. Myers.
Mm-hmm.
What was the subject again?
How the atheist movement should talk about religion.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, from my perspective, I was sweating bullets the whole time because I'm trying to moderate this debate, and you know, people who have had words on the internet, and at the same time, there was a once in a lifetime like glitch here in the studio, and I'm trying to manage all of these things. And how was the debate? I never got to ask you, how was the debate from your perspective?
I thought it was a good conversation. I felt that we had some meaningful dialogue about a number of issues, and I got to make a lot of the points that I wanted to make, and I feel like the level of disagreement that PZ and I have is really, it's overblown a lot of the times, and it's more stylistic. I think that ultimately, I don't know, I guess I was left with the impression that PZ doesn't deny the importance of what folks like myself are trying to do, which is we're trying to build positive communities to represent humanist, secularist, atheist, and the non-religious, and to further the agenda of and improve the lives of our own community and of all people. And I feel like the disagreement was maybe semantic and what have you, but
tone or
but
style.
That's what I'm trying to do, and I feel like having that conversation, sort of getting it over with, has really led to a very productive year for us here at the Humanist community at Harvard of just sort of moving that forward. And I what I would just say is that look on the horizon, this idea of doing more on the national stage to spread the concept of humanist community and community for secular and atheist people is about to take a leap forward. We're working on some big stuff. We're excited about it. Maybe I'll come talk to you more if something big should happen in the future, but we really feel like this is about to be one of the next big things in the movement.
Wow. I have no idea what you're talking about, and I'm already excited.
We'll certainly keep our eyes and ears peeled.
So, Greg Epstein is the current humanist chaplain at Harvard University and an ordained humanist rabbi, and is the author of Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe. Thank you. I had a great time talking with you. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Billy Graham.
Mike's been itching to talk about this one.
So I had a transition, but come on, Billy Graham.
Yeah, he's not dead yet, not for lack of trying.
Ow!
These days he kind of looks like that guy from Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade who drank out of the wrong grail.
Yeah. In his defense, he eschews this optional surgeries and stuff like that.
Maybe he shouldn't.
Maybe he's... Wow.
So what's up with Billy Graham right now?
Well, he is making a de facto endorsement for the presidential campaign. I don't...
Who is he endorsing, Mike?
Well, I'll tell you a secret. He had a private meeting with Mitt Romney last week, and the 93-year-old Christian evangelist has broken with his tradition in a number of ways this year. For one, after publicly avoiding politics for decades, Graham's organization has put out full-page ads in the Wall Street Journal and the USA Today calling for voters to vote against candidates who are for same-sex marriage and support abortion rights.
Right.
Hint, hint. Also, to make this a little bit more interesting, his organization has gone through their website and scrubbed out all evidence that the evangelist has made statements negative about Mormonism, including calling them a cult alongside the Jehovah's Witnesses and Scientology.
Right. So he was against Mormonism, and he would be on his website, and his organization had a bunch of stuff on it about how Mormonism wasn't Christianity and how terrible it was. But suddenly there's a political angle to this because the there's a conservative Mormon that's going to be president.
Probably not.
Probably not. Well, polling. And well, there's a candidate anyway, and the opposite is somebody who is you know, speaking about gay marriage and stuff like that, and stuff that he disagrees with.
Suddenly, the magic underwear and Kolob isn't as big of a deal as it was before.
So, a little revisionist history there.
Just a little bit, and ABC News actually called him out on it, and they said, "We removed the information from the website because we do not wish to participate in a theological debate about something that has become politicized during this campaign." Not as like, if abortion never has before.
Isn't abortion and gay marriage politicized, and aren't they having theological debates about it?
I gotta ask, has anybody really hit Romney on the Mormonism thing in the entire campaign? Has there been attack ads or anything like that?
Not on TV. There have been preachers and stuff that have come out and attacked it, and this was mostly during the primaries. They've been remarkably quiet over the past couple months once they won the nomination.
Alright, let me focus this on the main part of the... I realize that the GOP primary phase was like 15 years long, but the... just this year's election with, you know, against the current president.
As John McCain called that one?
That one.
Yeah, against that one. There hasn't been a lot of people pulling it out, though I imagine that they're probably thinking it pretty heavily.
Okay.
I have seen some, you know, sort of Mormon spoof things, Mormon parodies sort of floating around in the blogosphere a little bit.
Okay.
Interestingly, nobody has rioted or bombed any embassies because of these videos.
Well, yeah, but on the other, I mean, you've got somebody like Dana Milbank, who I'd seen pictures of before and knew was like, I don't know why I made that mistake. Anyway,
you've got a girl's name, Milbank.
Yeah, and that's really not something I should be saying. But I, you know, when they're willing to say something so ridiculous about us, you know, about the humanist organizations and about the SCA having a press briefing, and I can't imagine, I find it hard to believe that there haven't been those religious but liberal columnists going on a warpath on that.
Well, the thing is, religion is powerful, yeah. And they don't want to make people angry. And the thing is, when they're powerful, they're much more likely to treat them with respect.
Yeah.
And Billy Graham is this guy who's had this sort of consummate respect for decades because of this perception of him as a guy who's sort of above the fray on social war issues, even though he's not.
No, he's also been perceived as the president's preacher.
Yeah, he's the de facto White House chaplain. He's sort of like Tom on MySpace, the guy you get as a friend automatically when you sign on.
Yeah.
And the truth is, though, is that for all his talk about being above the fray, Billy Graham has made statements praising Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il's dad, as a different kind of communist.
He's the Saturn cards of communism.
He is a different kind, as in crazier.
Yeah.
He also has in his advice column.
Gentler communist.
What's that?
He has an advice column where he said that atheists have no good reason to believe in right and wrong. And most importantly, back in the 90s, Nixon's former chief of staff wrote a book that talked about a conversation that then-President Nixon had with Graham, talking about how the satanic Jews controlled the media and they're dragging the country down the drain. Graham completely distanced himself. That's absolutely a lie. Then the recording came out in 2002 verifying exactly what the chief of staff had said. So despite the fact that he is like half-dead and looks like a desiccated mummy, and his people probably write this stuff for him, it does mesh with stuff he said in the past.
So you don't like Billy Graham, then?
Just a little bit. I dislike him just to a slight degree.
Yeah, wow. I guess I am not a big fan of the guy myself. I've always thought he was a little bit, yeah, you know, they portray him as somebody above the fray, but I've never had quite that. I guess he was never that important to me. And that's part of it, I think, is you've got people like Billy Graham. I think the idea that he's the president's, you know, pastor or whatever, that has always bothered the crap out of me. It's not what he says to me that's the problem. It's his pseudo-professional capacity with the White House that bothers me.
That bothers me, but I think what bothers me most, why I get emotional about this, is that for all the talk that he has about if you believe you don't believe you're going to go to hell, all the standard stuff that is not moderate, that is nasty and ugly about Christianity,
right?
He's a big part of that, always has been. Yet there's this perception that his poop doesn't stink. He doesn't get thrown in the same category as a Jerry Falwell or a Pat Robertson.
But might that be because of his relative irrelevance? He gets media attention, of course, because of his connection to the White House. But he's not exactly running a megachurch, or he's not focused on the family. He's not the Family Research Council. I don't think he's as big as those guys are. I don't think he's as influential.
I don't think he's as influential, but I do think he's as big. This is a guy who has TV networks and magazines and these major crusades that go around the country.
I'm not talking about his business aspect, the business aspect of it. I'm talking about his actual, because I mean, he backs horses a little bit more than he himself goes, right?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the fact that, like Mother Teresa, who also says a lot of horrible socially conservative stuff, it's the immunity that he has to actually be called to the carpet for the stuff he says.
Yeah.
The fact that people like the idea of Billy Graham so much that they willfully ignore the positions he actually takes on a regular basis.
I don't know that I agree. I don't think that they like Billy Graham so much that they ignore the silly things that he says. Is I think he gets away with it because nobody cares that much. Well, I think that's part of it.
I think they like the idea of Billy Graham. It's sort of like they like the idea of Mother Teresa. Where with Falwell, it's easy to hate on him, but they want somebody like Billy Graham to exist.
I don't know. But there's a lot of people like Billy Graham who exist. I just can't go with you on that one. But the thing is one of our more interesting articles on the blog, every once in a while, you have your blog entry from like 2 years ago.
Yes.
Where you call Billy Graham out on the carpet. I'm like, yeah, okay.
If you want to check it out, go to askanatheist.tv. It's entitled Billy Graham, America's Favorite Bigot.
Yeah. And it's Billy Graham being Billy Graham. And every once in a while, one of my favorite things happens where we'll get a drive-by comment of somebody saying, I believe in Jesus and Billy Graham is great. You stink. Bye. In all caps. Because all caps is shorthand for awesome. So
all caps make something more true. That's been scientifically proven.
The thing is I use all caps for... I don't think people have noticed this on Facebook, and it's actually gotten me in trouble in a couple places, is that I use all caps to sort of signify intentional dumbness or intentional sarcasm. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, I'm totally voting for Billy Graham for Emperor of the Universe, is something I would say in all caps.
Well, he'll have a short term at least.
Yeah. How did you want to introduce Billy Graham?
What, aspiring corpse and evangelist Billy Graham?
Yeah, aspiring corpse and evangelist. Yeah, so not a lot of love for Billy Graham.
If you want to prove that there's no God, it's the fact that Hitchens didn't live long enough to write an obit for this guy.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if there's a secret stash of Hitchens obits somewhere. That's all the time we got for this week. My name is Sam. With me today was Mike and Rebecca. Our special guest was Greg Epstein. Thank you very much. As usual, our music is by Chris Coleman. My production assistant is Darren Garvin. Post show is at Overtime Bar and Grill at 6th Avenue and Alder in Tacoma in an hour. Ask an Atheist is an NDA Media.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma.